I recently read an article titled "In Praise of Scruffy Hospitality." In it, Robin Shreves talks about her journey toward the kind of hospitality that welcomes people even when the house isn't neat and tidy. The kind that is willing to invite folks into the authentic mess of our lives and to trust that they are there for friendship, not for a house inspection. She quotes Father Jack King, who defines scruffy hospitality this way. He says, "Scruffy hospitality means you're not waiting for everything in your house to be in order before you host and serve friends in your home. Scruffy hospitality means that you hunger more for good conversation and serving a simple meal of what you have, not what you don't have. Scruffy hospitality means you're more interested in quality conversation than the impression your home or lawn makes. If we only share meals with friends when we are excellent, we aren't truly sharing life together." When I read today's text, this idea of scruffy hospitality came to mind. It's not that Jesus is talking to us about being willing to have people into our homes when things are a little bit of a mess. It's not that Jesus talks about trusting that you can invite friends in and ask them to bring some of the food rather than having to provide everything. But what Jesus does do in the text we read today is to ask us to rethink our tables. Jesus doesn't talk about how clean the house is, or if there are enough seats, or if the meal is well coordinated, but he asks us to rethink our assumptions and instincts about who we're at the table with. And if it seems hard to imagine hosting a meal without your house freshly cleaned, which I know is hard for many of us, then it may seem even more difficult to imagine sitting down at a table with people you don't know, or people who aren't like you, or people with whom you already know you're uncomfortable. And yet, that's just what Jesus asks of us. Today's reading comes from the Gospel of Luke. Here in chapter 14, in the context of Jesus being in the home of a religious leader for a meal, he shares several table stories, all that ask people to rethink their assumptions and practices. Sabra read two of those stories for us today. And as we think about these stories, we want to not miss the reality that meals were of profound theological significance for Luke. When we hear a table story, we should take note and realize that something important or challenging or enlightening is about to happen. This is true of the stories like the ones we read today. It's true of the story at the end of Luke's gospel, where Jesus is made known after the resurrection. Do you remember how? It was in the act of breaking bread. Throughout the stories of Jesus' life, the table and the sharing of bread become points of connection, places where barriers are broken down, places where care and community and discovery are nurtured. As Fred Craddock wrote, breaking bread was important. In fact, the real test of whether a church included persons who were different was not at the point of baptizing them, but of eating with them. Fellowship meals were central in the church's life together. And they are no less central in the life of faith or in communities in general today. A lot can be said about us by watching who we eat with and how we welcome or don't welcome people to our tables. And if we're listening, Jesus just might challenge our practices. Because that's what happened here in today's readings. In two different parables about the table, Jesus asked people to rethink what they were doing there. When you are invited to a wedding banquet, do not sit down at the place of honor. That's how the first of these stories begins. And Jesus goes on saying, sit in the less honorable seat, so that if you are moved, you are moved to a more honorable position. Instead of choosing the table with the richest and most influential people, only to be told, I'm sorry, your seat is over there. We can hear this as simply being about humility. It's that, but even more than that, and even more than motivating us to feign humility, which it sometimes does, but even more so, this passage connects us back to the decisions we make about where we sit and who we sit with. And we make those decisions all the time. In so many ways, our decisions about the tables we sit at, about the people we eat with, these are decisions about the status we want to project. They are often made based on established relationships or desired connections, but rarely do we choose a place to sit where we seek out someone who is different or who society considers less than. But Jesus asks us to rethink our tables. And then that challenge continues as Jesus goes on saying, not only should we sit in the less desirable seats, but we should go out of our way to invite not only our friends and coworkers, not only those who can repay us, who can invite us or pay for lunch next time, but those who really need the meal, those who might not have a meal without us. Those who we might only see according to their label, sick or poor, outcast or other, but who God sees as a beloved child. Again, Jesus asks us to rethink our tables. And friends, the opportunities for us to do so, they are plentiful if we are paying attention. A pastor in her first year of seminary was attending General Assembly, much like the one that will be hosted here in Des Moines in July. The morning business had finished up, lunch break had come, she and a friend walked alongside throngs of others leaving the convention center, hurrying along, trying to get to the restaurants first, or at least to be early in line. Focused on that task, they walked past those sitting along the sidewalks, rattling cans of change, asking for help, saying, God bless you. In fact, they walked past, probably quite intentionally, not making eye contact. They got to a nearby restaurant, found their place in line, the door continued to open and close behind them as others walked in, and then they noticed a few people behind them in line was another assembly goer. But rather than being with a friend for lunch, he was standing next to a man they had seen about a block away, sitting begging on the street. A fellow disciple had not only made eye contact, but had invited that stranger to dinner. And these two young seminarians sitting in their comfort zone with each other were left rethinking the table. A couple was traveling by train for the weekend. Their trip wasn't long, but they happened to be on the train over mealtime. The announcement came over the loudspeaker. The dining car was open. They looked at each other. That might be fun. And certainly the food would be better than the chips or microwavable pizza they would get at the snack bar. Off they went, and upon entering, the server asked how many were in their party. Two, they replied. And he pointed them to a table to the left, a table where two other people were already sitting. They paused for a moment, unsure if they understood correctly, but he pointed again and led them that way. Yes, they were being seated with strangers. Fast forward an hour or so, and strangers had become friends. People who were just different enough from them by measures of demographics had become an important connection. And when they left the train that day, they were rethinking the table. A middle-aged couple traveled to an African country to visit their daughter. After some confusion in communication, they arrived at the airport 2 hours earlier than she was scheduled to come and pick them up. There they stood, in a strange country, having not had a meal for many hours, tired and hungry from their travel, and not really sure what to do while they waited. Apparently, the looks on their faces revealed their dilemma, and a stranger approached them. The stranger was clearly Muslim and was in a car with other traveling companions. Upon hearing their story and discovering that they were hungry and unable to call their daughter to let her know they had already arrived, the stranger and their companions responded. They pulled something from the car, which ended up being a pop-up table, and then they set it with fruits and drinks, some main course and desserts, food that was prepared for that group of Muslims to break the fast at sunset during Ramadan. In addition to the food, a phone was made available, and these Muslim companions kept the couple company until their daughter arrived. And in that encounter, this American couple was left rethinking the table. We are a congregation who has embraced the phrase, "There's room at the table for everyone." And we mean it. At least we try to mean it. But even with it written on our banners and our t-shirts, still there is always room to grow as we continue to explore what full inclusion means. Because this phrase on our sanctuary walls isn't just about the communion table. Let's be honest, disciples, for us, that's the easy part. To share communion with anyone who enters the sanctuary on Sunday morning, we've got that part down. But this is about so much more. And while in so many ways we have done an amazing job of welcoming the stranger, including those who are not like us, and celebrating the diversity around us, it is important to remember that the journey continues, that this work is ongoing work. Since being at the table is about recognizing another's humanity, about opening up our lives to be impacted by someone else, about leveling the playing field, it is no accident that when Jesus asks us to rethink how we do community, he uses table imagery. And remember, this means the tables we eat at, as well as the tables we make decisions at, and every table in between. This invitation to rethink the table is an invitation to step outside our comfort zones, to see people for their humanity and their giftedness beyond our preconceived ideas and stereotypes, to open ourselves to being a community that truly reflects God's kingdom. Friends, this is our desire, and this is our challenge, to rethink the table in very real ways in our very real lives, that our community and our hearts will truly be open to everyone. Amen.